That time again, Derek Dobies, Jackson Mayor, joins us. His regime is winding down. Do you feel that coming?
Now I do.
Okay. Sorry about that, I guess. Maybe not.
No. It's actually been fun. I have been joking about how I kind of made myself my own lame duck. And, you know, there's a certain period of time left between now and December 1st. But still got a lot of stuff that I want to get done and accomplish. And some of that stuff has already gotten done this year, and some of it has worked its way through some of our boards and commissions and is shortly here coming up in front of council, and a couple other big projects are in development. So it's exciting, but I haven't slowed down and still have my sights on, you know, leaving it all on the fields before December 1st.
Mm-hmm. Well, I see you have a couple big meetings coming up. Let's start with June 30th. Talk about that one.
Yeah, so June 30th, one of the things that we realized working with the Jackson County United Way is that housing stability and housing affordability is such a huge need here in the city of Jackson, and that's just been exacerbated by the coronavirus pandemic, and I think that it will continue to be so, especially as some of the stimulus dollars run out and some of the regulations that were put in place to protect people and keep people more whole during the pandemic lapse. I think that's going to be continuing to be a growing need here in our city. So sure. One of the things that we want to talk about is what we can do to abate that, what we can do to keep people on their feet, provide temporary housing and some other resources to address housing instability. We know that that's just going to continue to grow. And one of the projects that, you know, we've been exploring is the Ethnos building on East Michigan Avenue. Mm-hmm. It's been a conversation. I think it's appeared in the paper a few times, and you and I believe have talked about it. But yeah, it's an incredible facility, over 100,000 square feet, I believe, and has a number of different amenities as we're kind of looking at opportunities and facilities to be able to address the housing instability that we have here. There's probably more than 50 rooms that would be able to be used for transitionary housing. And
that's where that's where the new tribes were for a number of years.
Yes, the old Bible Institute.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and, you know, it also has enough space where, you know, there was a daycare in there. There's an entire theater in there, entire basketball court, a track around the basketball court, an entire kitchen. Mm-hmm. So a lot of different opportunities for us to kind of concentrate some services there and help get people back on their feet and really, I think, in a very robust and coordinated way address housing instability here in the city. So we're going to be talking about that at the June 30th meeting. I think Councilmember Dancy is going to be pulling that together. And, you know, we're going to be engaging the community around some of those concepts, some of those ideas, get some feedback and figure out what we can do to work together on a project there, hopefully.
Number one issue, money? Money?
Yeah, you know, I think so. You know, the Jackson County United Way is a partner, and they also have some resources, some buildings themselves, and obviously the city has some funds that have been made available by the federal government, our American Rescue Plan dollars that can be used to support affordable housing projects in the city. So, you know, I think it'll be a collaboration. We've been having ongoing conversations with a number of different agencies within the social service sector here in the city to talk about that project, to talk about what we can do to help address housing instability. The fact that, you know, we have a large number of people that, you know, we have one shelter here in town at the Interfaith Shelter. And, you know, they sometimes reach capacity, and sometimes there's just people that don't want to stay in that congregate housing or have, you know, children and other needs that they that's not an opportunity for them. So, you know, I think I've always said that you can judge a city by how they treat the most vulnerable among them. And, you know, I think we have to approach this from a vantage point of what can we do collaboratively and compassionately to address the housing and affordability and instability here in the city.
Would the city, Derek, have to be prepared to run this? I mean, obviously, a facility that size, you would have to hire on some staff, a manager, those sorts of things.
Yeah, you know, that's TBD, I guess. You know, I don't think we're at that phase yet. I think we're at the phase of, you know, exploration. And I know that, you know, the United Way and their executive director, Ken Toll, over there is also very excited about the project. And so I think that, you know, we would have some other partners in the community that would be helping to coordinate that. My ultimate goal and interest is, and we used to actually have the Affordable Housing Development Corporation here at the city that, well, it was a nonprofit that worked on developing affordable housing options. And, you know, I think it's worth us. We've had a couple of different CHOTOs that have used some of our home funds that are federal funds provided to address affordable housing, make necessary repairs to those that are eligible. In fact, some of the funds, those funds are going to support the Habitat project that's happening just south of downtown. So I think, you know, we can get very creative, but also we can get very coordinated as well. And so, you know, I've started to engage in conversations with city administration about what we can do to bring back some sort of collaborative entity like that. And so, you know, I think whether it's that entity, whether it's the Jackson County United Way operating a facility like that, I think that there's going to be a lot of different options for us to consider.
So then in July, you have a couple meetings regarding the ARP funding plan. Are those open to the public?
Yeah, they'll be open to the public. We're going to do them likely online just because of the ease of technology of walking through some of the different stipulations of the ARP funds and also talking about what has been proposed by administration up to this point. You know, we're going to have a certain portion of that money going to recoup some of the funds through income tax and other means that have been lost because of the pandemic. The administration has proposed that a certain portion of those funds are going towards water treatment plant project, you know, water treatment plant projects, sewer wastewater treatment plant projects as well. I think 25% and 25% respectively for each of those, as well as some, you know, direct services to residents like we did with the CARES Act funding. So, you know, I think that, you know, that's worth, we'll probably have some of those projects start to pop up at the next council meeting on July 13th. But I really think it's important to continue to engage because this is such an opportunity for some transformational change here in the city. I think it's important for us to continue to engage the public around what those funds can be used for. The current plan being proposed by the administration for those funds and where gaps exist in that plan. And I'll say that, you know, I think that, and I've already had a conversation with the city manager about this. I think that affordable housing is such a huge issue here in the city that and it is such a it is eligible expenditure by the final rule for the ARP funding that I think it's worth us considering what we can do to, in using some of these funds for affordable housing development here in the city. You know, we have a lot of projects already underway downtown, but there's still a lot more infill space that we have downtown. There's a lot of infill space that we have down through the MLK corridor. And, you know, with all the vacant lots that we have a lot of opportunity to redevelop out and into our neighborhoods as well. So I think that's got to be part of the conversation. And having those meetings, I think on July 6th and July 27th in the evening, hopefully we'll be able to get some feedback on the use of those funds, listen to what the community wants and needs, and make those amendments and expenditures accordingly.
Then the next council meeting, my favorite ordinance, the urban farming ordinance, will be, I guess, voted on, right?
Are you going to be out there farming your front yard there?
Yeah, you know, I need a list of animals.
We'll get you some. We'll get you some potbelly pigs, Greg. I think that's coming up.
Those are a little smelly for me.
Fair enough. Well, that's coming up on July 13th. Planning Commission recommended the ordinance to council with some different caveats around directing staff to develop the enforcement mechanism. So those are expected to hit the council agenda on July 13th to address the urban farming ordinance. And then one of the other ordinances is, I believe we probably talked about it in the past too, Planning Commission. I brought it up at the Planning Commission that I serve on, and that body recommended, I think unanimously, to move it on to City Council too. A new ordinance that stipulates by parking space how many electric vehicle charging ports that would be required through our site planning process. I think as we start to look to the future and start to look at the mass adoption of electric vehicles, that cities that don't build that into their planning process and build that into not, you know, existing developments and making everybody go back through and, you know, place charging stations on their sites. But for new developments with new parking lots, starting to think about how we can incorporate charging stations, whether they're EV capable, EV ready, or installed, what we can do to actually get some of those charging stations spread throughout our community so that we don't have a competitive disadvantage with surrounding communities going forward as more and more people start to drive electric vehicles and start to look at where they can stop and spend their money or spend the night, where they can also charge their car. So I think it's prudent for us to consider that, to look, you know, 10 years down the road at where we want to be and start to address our policies accordingly.
Would you describe the cost for those as expensive, or how would you rate that?
Well, I think the cheapest way to do it is to plan ahead. And, you know, they're a lot less expensive if you're putting the infrastructure in as you're building the parking lot, right?
Sure, sure.
If you have to go back through and cut up your parking lot and install those, it's going to, you know, exponentially increase the cost. So that's why I think we want to, and we're seeing the cost for those come down, you know, year after year, just like every other piece of technology. So I think that, you know, it's prudent for us to consider that in our site planning process. You know, right now it's written so it's only for new developments and, you know, when people are putting in a new parking lot. So I think that's a good first step. And, you know, if we can get in when they're doing it and a certain, you know, it's by similar to, you know, handicap parking where you have stipulations around how many spots per, you know, other spaces. It's similar to that of how many spaces need to be capable, meaning that they, you know, have power to that site. How many are ready where they have a, you know, a box installed on site, and how many where they actually have a station installed. So, you know, I think it's a good policy. It's certainly worth considering. And as we look to the mass adoption of electric vehicles, I think it gives the city a competitive edge sitting on the 94 corridor for us to have people stop into the city of Jackson, spend some time here, and hopefully spend some money here.
Are you staying virtual with the your regular council meetings?
You know, yesterday was the 22nd, the day that a lot of these stipulations and regulations around mask wearing and stuff were lifted by the state.
Mm-hmm.
Last week, we began to engage in a conversation around the local state of emergency, and I think you're going to see some news coming out next week about that, that will change some of the ways that the city of Jackson does business as well. So I've started to engage some of the other surrounding mayors. A lot of their stuff extends, you know, through July, but, you know, I think that we've had some conversations with our city attorney's office, and we're going to be making some news next week on that. Maybe I'll save that for next Wednesday for
you. There you go. Jackson Mayor Derek Dolby. Thanks, Derek.
Hey, thanks, Greg. I appreciate it.
Take care.